One thing we won't be doing on this retreat is playing pseudo-Zen games. I want us, above all else, to enjoy ourselves. But let's none of us pretend to be Zen masters. You even find in the tradition, you know, criticism of this. You know, they'll have a discussion of a particular exchange between master and disciple, and the commentator will say, "Well, nowadays people put a glare in their eyes, and they shout at people, thinking that they're Zen masters." So even this was going on in the 7th century, in the 8th century, that there's this kind of false Zen. So we won't be doing any of that. We won't be doing any weird things and calling it Zen. Of course, if the weird things naturally arise, that's a different thing. And in fact, this word Zen these days covers a real multitude of sins. Weird behaviour must be Zen. Minimal design must be Zen. You know, I sometimes hear it on arts programmes. I was listening a few months ago to a discussion of a play, and the reviewers are saying, "It's very Zen, very Zen." And you heard the description of the play, but it's nothing to do with Zen. It's just very minimal, but it's got nothing to do with Zen. Sometimes Zen is presented as something sort of separate from Buddhism, even superior to Buddhism. But this, of course, is not how the Zen tradition sees itself. It sees itself as continuing and developing Buddhism as taught by the Buddha and developed in India. And you get some idea of this from the actual meaning of the word Zen. You've all heard this word Zen, but what does it actually mean? Well, the word Zen is the Japanese attempt to pronounce the Chinese word Chan. And Chan itself is the Chinese attempt to pronounce the Indian Sanskrit word Dhyana, which means meditation. So you've got Dhyana, Chan, Zen. Dhyana, India; Chan, China; Zen, Japan. You've also got, you mustn't miss out Korea, because Korea is very important in the development of the Zen tradition. That the word there is Sun. I think that's how you say it. So Dhyana means meditation. Meditation not in the sense of attempting to concentrate, which is what we're doing most of the time, that's bhavana, attempting to concentrate or develop a particular quality. Dhyana means absorption, the mind thoroughly saturated in a higher or a deeper, whatever metaphor you prefer, a higher, a deeper consciousness, a more profound level of being. It's a highly concentrated, integrated state where you're at ease, blissful, clear, and you have a sense of your consciousness expanding and softening. And in classical Indian Buddhist tradition, different dhyanas are distinguished, higher levels of consciousness, some of which have no discursive thought whatsoever. All that restless mental activity is completely subsided, and there's this deep, profound concentration and presence. And of course, it's very important to have this experience, a sense that through your meditation, you are deepening your concentration, you are becoming more integrated, that your consciousness is expanding, that there's greater clarity and awareness, greater happiness, greater satisfaction. Very important here when we talk about this, it's not about straining to get something. I think when I was first meditating, I thought, got to get into dhyana, got to kind of squeeze myself into dhyana, get that dhyana. And of course, that's completely self-defeating. You're not trying to grab and get anything. You just practice and let things unfold and let that deepening concentration and happiness and clarity just naturally unfold. Dhyana, though, is not the end of spiritual life. Dhyana can be gained and it can be lost. It's not a permanent attainment. You know, we notice this in our experience, that we can be going along very, very nicely. Everything kind of flowing very well. Things are coming together. And then suddenly something happens and we're just completely thrown. Completely thrown, and we're all over the place. So it's not a permanent attainment. For a permanent attainment, we need wisdom. Prajna, seeing things as they really are. Your concentrated, positive mind enables you into your life, into yourself, into the way things are. And at some point, there's a direct face-to-face realization. A realization, say, of the impermanence of all things, the flow, the changing nature of things. A realization that there are no differences between yourself and others, that nowhere are there fixed and separate entities at all. You have a sense of things interpenetrating with one another. Here, dhyana and prajna come together. Your profound meditation and your clear seeing are not different. This is a very important point that's brought out particularly by the great sixth patriarch of Chinese Chan Zen Buddhism, Hui Neng, where he says that meditation and wisdom are not different. Meditation is the lamp, prajna is the light. They're not separable. This is a very, very important teaching with a lot of ramifications, which I hope to explore a bit later on. So the Chan school, the Zen school, is referring to meditation in this highest sense. The aim is to experience the way things are directly through meditation. And in this sense, Chan and Zen is no different at all from any other major Buddhist tradition. The aim of all major Buddhist schools is to attain reality through meditation. And for that to happen, of course, you need other things as well. You need ethical practice, observance of the Buddhist precepts. You need study of the Buddhist scriptures. You need devotional practice. You need spiritual friendship, a simple life, serving others, even work, participation in the arts, and so on. You need all these things, a total life to bring you to realization.